Welcome to Celebrity Book Club,
the podcast where we read the memoirs of pop culture icons so you don't have to.
I'm Kara.
And I'm Carrie. And today we're talking about Me by Elton John.
Incredible title, first of all.
This is our second book that is titled Me. These celebs are original.
So original. Not to be confused with the Taylor Swift song, Me.
Or the Katharine Hepburn's memoir, Me.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Which, much like Katharine Hepburn's memoir, I didn't finish this book. Not out of a lack of interest, because listeners, as soon as we finish recording the pod, I'm going to read the last 20 pages, but I just ran out of time.
You got way further than I did.
Yes, but I didn't technically finish, and I like the parallel that we couldn't finish the book's name, Me.
Maybe that's the rule, that if there's a book titled Me, we just don't finish it.
Now I'm curious how many celebrity memoirs are titled Me. And it's like, A, I could research that, or B, I could just keep being surprised.
I like that. That seems on brand for this podcast.
Really reckless. Like when we made it 40 minutes into an episode before we realized that Drew Barrymore had a better book.
Oh, goodness. Well, I'm glad this was such an enjoyable find for you.
So enjoyable. Really the most fun I've had while reading. I will say that I really enjoy the Jessica Simpson memoir, but it wasn't a fun read besides the Mickey Mouse Club chapter. It was a lot of like looking at our lives and choices and like reconciling like how we treated this person.
Mm.
This book is great. Elton John is so funny. It's a funny book. Like I laughed out loud at points.
Wow.
He is a hoot. Like, he's just doing his thing, telling some wild ass stories, literally stories about every single person. Speaking of Katharine Hepburn, there's a paragraph about Katharine Hepburn in here.
Wow.
One summer afternoon, he was sitting outside his bungalow having a snack when they noticed a 60-something lady who looked a little like Katharine Hepburn cycling up our drive. It was Katharine Hepburn. She said, "I'm staying with Brian Forbes, who's a man that lived in the area, and he said it would be okay if I used your pool." And then they're like, "Sure, use the pool." 5 minutes later, she reappeared in a swimsuit, complaining that there was a dead frog in the pool. I dithered about how to get it out. I'm a bit squeamish about things like that. She just jumped in and grabbed it with her hand. I asked her how she could bear to touch it. "Character, young man," she nodded sternly.
Oh.
And that's it. That's just, it's a paragraph about Katharine Hepburn just thrown in this book. There are countless stories like this about every celebrity you've ever thought of.
Oh my God. I have to ask. See, now that I ask this, you're going to be like, no, there's not a story about this person. Is Reese Witherspoon in this book?
Unless she's in the last 20 pages. No, she does not get, I can't imagine that they run in the same circles.
That's fair.
Elton John is more prestigious than Reese Witherspoon.
Mm-hmm.
There are almost like two social circles that we navigate in. This one, which is a little classier than I think you and I generally care about.
Sure.
And then whatever Reese Witherspoon's doing.
Either way, I'm still excited to hear all his anecdotes.
Good, because you're going to.
Amazing. So Carrie, you read Me by Elton John.
I did.
And it sounds like it was a hoot. But do you think you could maybe distill it down to 60 seconds?
I will try my very best.
All right. Your time starts now.
Me details the story of Elton John's early childhood in Pinner, England, his complicated relationship with his mother, his estranged relationship with his father, his early interests and attempts to be successful in music, including a childhood acceptance into the Royal Academy of Music and his various bands that he attempted to start, finding his writing partner and best friend in Bernie Taupin, his rise to fame, coupled with his first real relationship to his manager, John Reed, his 16-year addiction to cocaine, alcohol, and food, and subsequent bulimia, his journey to sobriety and self-acceptance, his involvement in various AIDS and HIV charities, finding long-term love, and, as previously mentioned, general debauchery and wild stories about everyone except for Reese Witherspoon that you could possibly think of.
Nice. That was exactly 60 seconds. I want to learn about all of those things.
I truly had a hard time picking a chapter for this. There are so many moments. Each chapter I finished, I was like, okay, well, that's the one I'm going to do. And then kept pushing it. And so you're getting pretty close to the time at which I stopped reading because I just
kept getting better.
That was the one we were on. I was like, this is it. It's perfect.
And I don't know if you would agree with this, but I found that at least in the books that I've read, it's very clear to me what chapter I'm going to pick once I read it.
Yes, in almost every other situation.
Yeah, a chapter will end and I'll be like, oh, that's clearly like the standout chapter. Like that's clearly...
Yes.
Is linchpin a word that's based in racism? It sounds like it is.
It sounds like it is. So it could be the cornerstone.
Yeah, there you go. Cornerstone. But yes, it usually seems like there's a chapter that is sort of like the big chapter that they're basing the book around. But with Elton John, that seems to be not the case because he has lived quite a life, it seems.
Lived such a life. Not to continue to draw comparisons to Me by Katharine Hepburn, but it's someone who's had so much happen and has no barrier in telling it to you. There's no facade in front of it. It's just like, this happened. I did this. I lived this. Here we go.
I love that.
He got famous in like 1970. So that's 50 years of, this came out in 2018. So just under 50 years of like,
oh damn,
real experiences to talk through, which is makes for a really enjoyable book. I like the idea of younger people trying to reclaim the narrative and shape the world around them. I think that that's interesting, but who do I love someone who has seen it all and is just going to tell it to you like it is.
Agreed. Agreed. Because there's so much, I don't know. There's something to be gleaned, I think, from a perspective, having a perspective on a situation. The book that I'm reading right now for next week, the person is solidly in middle age, I would say, but like is talking a lot about their early years with a lot of detail, but also with like, you're able to look back on it with a different perspective.
Yeah.
Whereas like one of the things I remember from Mindy Kaling's first book is that she would like tell stories of her adolescence. And I was like, you still feel the same way about this that you felt about it when it happened to you. So I don't think you should be writing about it yet. Does that make sense?
It absolutely does. There's something interesting about like the immediacy of talking about something, but also you get such an added benefit from being removed. It makes me think of The Vow, the NXIVM documentary.
Oh my God.
Because those are people who are still so in it and so feeling it, which I get it, they were in a cult. Sure. But like you can tell that their personal relationship affects the ability of the documentary to tell a full story.
Yes.
I just think that the whole documentary would be a bit more interesting if I felt like the people making it had an opinion about the people who were sort of the heroes of it, because they're actually what I find the most interesting. These are people who like both want to take them down, but also very much care that they're seen as heroes.
Yes.
They care about their perception as much as anything else. The one where homegirl is like, it's on the front page of the New York Times. It's like part of this is because you care about him being taken down, but there's a large part of you that is thrilled that you're on the cover of the New York Times.
Were you the one who was talking about it's because they're all actors and they like all want their moment?
Yeah. Yeah. Probably. Yeah. Because I talk about it to anyone that will listen. Oh, okay. But Kara, what do you know about Elton John?
I know that he is an incredible singer-songwriter. I think probably my first exposure to him, even though I didn't know it at the time, was some of the music of The Lion King.
Sure, that makes a lot of sense.
Right? Mm-hmm. Oh, there we go. I'm singing.
Singing!
Singing! Yes. And I wouldn't say that I am like super familiar with all of his music, but I know the hits and I like them and I like and respect his songwriting. I did not see Rocket Man. I haven't seen it yet. I keep meaning to watch it and then I just don't, but I hear it's excellent.
We'll talk about it in about 30 seconds or whenever you finish your about the author and I do mine.
Here's the superior biopic.
Yes. You also, I think, heard that from me.
Yes. Yes. I did hear that from you.
So all your reviews of Rocket Man are just me about Rocket Man.
But also great. Other people whose opinions I trust were like, oh, that was a good movie.
Okay, great. Because I have no idea if I'm just like alone in the universe caring about Rocket Man as much as I do.
No. I hear it's actually excellent. I hear it's very good. Oh, and I know that he lives in Atlanta. That's the other thing that I know.
He has so many homes and I've learned about all of them.
Carrie, what do you know about Elton John?
Okay. My experience with Elton John. I once accidentally dressed up as Elton John for Halloween in the sixth grade.
Okay.
And you're wondering how that's possible.
I am.
I wanted to go as like a 60s, 70s like diva. And what I did was I bought very large like glittery bug-eyed glasses and a feather boa. And I don't remember the rest of the outfit. Fun fact, I was trick-or-treating that year not far from your neighborhood. But each house that I went to, they went, oh, it's Elton John.
No.
And the first like three houses, I tried to explain that I had branded myself as a disco diva, like that was the character. I made up my own thing. I didn't go to a Spirit Halloween store. I did it myself.
Yes.
And I'm going to tell you that the suburban Maryland houses did not care about my story. And they're like, oh, okay. And just wanted to move along. Also, sixth grade, you've hit the spot where you aren't cute going trick-or-treating anymore.
Yeah, it's kind of like, what is this kid doing? Like,
and they're like not trying, you're young enough that nobody's trying to shame you into not doing it. Like they're protecting your innocence in some ways, but also,
but it's not cute.
A 12-year-old explaining that she's not Elton John, but she is in fact a made-up disco character.
Mm-hmm.
Get ready. By the time you all are hearing this, you should check out our social media because that photo will be used for this week's cover art.
Yes. So
you too can see what I looked like as a sixth grader accidentally trick-or-treating as Elton John.
Incredible.
My next major touch point for Reginald Dwight, aka Elton John, is the movie Almost Famous is my second favorite movie of all time. And both Tiny Dancer and Mona Lisa's and Mad Hatters are featured in that film. And it's really, really great. Also, fun fact, Mandy Moore has an outstanding cover of Mona Lisa's and Mad Hatters. Like,
interesting.
Beautiful, beautiful cover.
Did not know.
And then finally, Rocket Man taught me everything I've ever wanted to know about Reginald Dwight, aka Elton John. This is a Taryn Edgerton Rocket Man Appreciation Podcast. If you don't like that, again, I say cinephiles at me because that movie is good. Taryn Edgerton should have won an Academy Award. And instead, homeboy Rami Malek made a mediocre Freddie Mercury joint the year before and fools, I say, gave him an Academy Award for lip syncing when Taryn Edgerton sang all the songs. It's an incredible movie. It's like a jukebox musical, but better. And they skipped the step where it was a music. It's a full-on musical. It's exceptional. Ooh. Carol, watch it. Watch it tomorrow. A part of me, when I was reading this weekend, I was debating, like, should I tell you to watch it beforehand or not? And like, I couldn't make up my mind of whether you should see it before we talk about it.
I feel like it's on Hulu, I think.
Oh, it is. It's on Hulu. I've watched it twice since it started streaming.
Oh my God.
Oh, I love it. The man that I think both my spouse and I would most like to sleep with is probably Taryn Edgerton.
Really?
Like that we both share. That's common. Like if you're going through each of our lists and that's where the first
overlap.
Yeah. So that movie is incredible. It's really, really good and really worth it.
Good to know.
And I just think that everyone should watch it. And we will not be spending a lot of time talking about the chapters covered in the Rocket Man journey. So you should watch it and you'll learn a lot more than what we talk about today.
I can't wait for my two-part education in the life of Reginald Dwight, aka Elton John.
Kara, would you like to play a game?
I would.
We're going to play a brand new game. This is a new game. It's called Elton or Bernie, Elton John, aka Reginald Dwight, is a man with lots of best friends. Okay. But one that he credits for much of his success is his longtime lyricist slash writing partner, Bernie Taupin.
Got it. I thought this was going to be Bernie Sanders. Continue.
Very different game, and I don't know what that game looks like, but I'll figure it out at some point.
Great.
Hey, this is about Bernie Taupin. Are you familiar with Bernie Taupin at all?
Nope.
Kara?
I'm not.
See, now if I had made you watch Rocket Man, you I would be. Because he is the main character besides Elton John in Rocket Man. And it's really great. And it's a beautiful story about friendship. And you should just watch it. This is a Rocket Man appreciation pod. But I have a working theory that every single friendship has a Bernie and an Elton.
Okay.
And we are going to test that theory with a brand new game called Elton or Bernie.
All right. I'm ready.
Now, listeners, you can play along too. Kara and I will be playing using ourselves as the friendship where we're testing who's the Elton and who's the Bernie. But really just pick any of your best friends. Again, much like Elton and Mindy Kaling, a best friend isn't a person. It's a tier. So just pick someone, keep them in mind, and you too can play along while we ask the following questions. All right, Kara.
Mm-hmm.
Between the two of us, who is more likely to hook up with the first person that they meet on vacation?
Me.
You? Okay, yeah. Great. That's a hard point for Bernie. The alternative is Elton John, who remained a virgin until he was 23 years old. So
good for him.
Take it. Honestly, for both of us, I think we're both a little Bernie and a little Elton on this one.
Oh, for sure. I mean, like,
We've got some late bloomer tendencies.
We do. I also think at different points in our lives, we would have answered that question differently.
Yes, I absolutely agree. I think that the true nuanced answer that makes it less of a game is that everybody's a little bit Bernie and everybody's a little bit Elton, but for the purposes of this game, we're just going to see how it goes. So
I love it.
You have 1 point for Bernie. Which one of us is more likely to be wildly off base about the quality of our work? Like, which one of us, we write something that is good. Which one of us is more likely to be like, this is trash. This is shit. This is utter garbage.
You.
Okay. That gives me a point for Elton. Honestly, I thought this was going to go the other way on both of these so far. So we'll just see. I'm curious to see how this goes. Elton John famously said that Don't Let the Sun Go Down on Me was a piece of trash and he didn't want to release it. Don't let the sun go down on me.
Interesting.
Yeah, so Elton John, wildly inaccurate about the quality of his own work.
Yeah, it plays in grocery stores across America every day.
That's what his dreams were.
Mm-hmm.
Who is more likely to troll the other person within their writing? Like, in our writing, who's more likely to be mean to the other one?
I would say you.
Yeah, I would agree. It's me.
Yeah.
It's me. In general, I'm the meaner one of the two of us. So that gives me a point in the Bernie direction.
Okay.
Several stories with this. Bernie Taupin has written songs to try to get Elton off drugs. Whole songs about, like, how cocaine was killing him. He also wrote songs about coming out before Elton had come out. And most notably, this one kind of has to come with a trigger warning.
Sure.
But there was once a time when, I almost gave this to you as a question and then I decided not to. There was once a time when Elton John was engaged to a woman and he was figuring out and realizing that he was gay. And he thought rather than end the relationship, he would try to kill himself.
Oh, no.
So he stuck his head in an oven, but he used a pillow. He put a pillow down and he barely turned the gas on and kept the window open. So it was a very well ventilated room.
That's not funny. I shouldn't laugh.
I know. I honestly have been trying to, it's one of my favorite anecdotes and I know it's not funny. And Elton John later had more serious suicide attempts, but he makes this one sound so funny that it's hard not to have like a little bit of levity because he now does.
It also reminds me of, again, talking about the holiday of Kate Winslet huffing the burner gas.
Yes. Yes.
What am I doing?
But Bernie Taupin found Elton with his head on a pillow in the oven. And then that's when he wrote the lyrics to somebody saved my life tonight. So he wrote a whole lyric set about
himself saving Elton John's life.
Bernie Taupin is the shit.
Shade King. I love it.
Shade King Bernie Taupin. Okay. Who would probably have a closet filled with 1,000 candles among other pack rat tendencies?
Probably me.
Yes, that's a point for Elton. We're tied. We each are 50-50 Elton and Bernie so far, for those of you keeping track in this bizarre game. Yeah, Elton John is a pack rat. Was much worse. He once, his whole home was filled to the point that his squash courts were covered in stuff. Like just boxes and boxes of things. And he reached out to Sotheby's and basically was like, take it all. Take everything but the record collection. And then eventually, years later, he got rid of the record collection too.
Wow.
But like, he hit full pack rat. Like, crazy pants pack rat. Who would more likely cover their genitalia with a giant Christmas tree or other Christmas display? And who would be angry that the other one did that?
I feel like both of us would do the cover, would do the Christmas thing, but I feel like you would be a little more mad about it.
Yes. So here's what I also think. For some reason, I think I'm both of these. I think I would more likely walk out in an elaborate display, though actually you would too. I think we're both equally likely to do that part, but pretty much in our friendship have gotten mad at me like a very small amount of times. And it's always like a very tiny baby mad. It's never like, I can't fucking stand you. And like, I'm like a full grown mad when I get mad about things. I'm like irritated. But like, would I be angry at you for wearing an embarrassing outfit? No.
No.
But of the two of us who would be angry about some sort of attention seeking behavior,
it would be you.
You were more likely to be like, I guess she just needs this right now. Which one of us would be overcome with stage fright to the point that not even a former Beatle could get them into the spotlight?
Honestly, me.
Yeah, I think that's fair. The thing I didn't cover but should have been clear is that the Christmas tree display on your genitalia is Elton John. So we each get a point for Elton. For those of you keeping score, I don't think I am. And the one who was angry about it was Bernie. So I guess I also get another Bernie point. So I'm tied. You're leaning. You're an Elton rising right now.
Got it. For those of you who don't know, Carrie hates astrology. So it's a really big deal that she just said that.
And I don't even think I used it right.
You kind of did. Who of Bernie and Elton hates astrology? Because that's who you are.
Oh, it's definitely, like, if I had to guess, it's definitely Bernie. Like, Elton's definitely had his full chart done. But they're both British, so they both probably think it's dumb.
Oh, true.
Okay, but now we're both tied again because you would be more likely to have stage fright that even John Lennon couldn't get you on stage.
Yeah.
So that's a Bernie. Bernie wouldn't do that.
Fuck a John Lennon.
Fuck John Lennon. Tough look. I mean, I only recently, not... I was just going to say, I only recently learned that he died. But what I meant is, like, I only recently got to the part in Elton's book where he died. So
I only recently learned via Elton John's memoir that John Lennon was deceased.
Wouldn't that be wild?
Really? All of those, like, ugly tourist flowers at Strawberry Fields never tipped you off?
Which one of us would get so drunk at a restaurant that they owned that they decided to stand on a table and start insulting their ex's mother?
You.
Absolutely me.
Yep.
And you get a point for Bernie for this because he kind of scolds Elton about this, but mostly he just calls him to let him know that this happened. And that's what you would do. You would just call me the next day and be like, listen, so this is what you did. Here you go. But yes, I would absolutely stand. I wouldn't even need the alcohol. One sip and I'd be like, let me talk about your mother.
Let me tell you about yourselves. Yes. Absolutely.
We've already covered which one of us is more going to be wildly off base about our work, but which one of us would be more brutally honest about the quality, but a little more accurate?
I guess me.
I think you tend to be more accurate, but I also think you like a lot of what we do, but maybe that's just my don't let the sun go down on me moment.
Yeah. Objectivity is hard, But I feel like I'm also the kind of person who will like look at something we wrote and be like, this doesn't work. I can't figure out why, but let's look at it.
Yeah, sure.
Instead of just being like, this whole thing sucks.
Yeah. And I would do the latter.
Yeah.
This whole thing sucks. Why are we doing this? What's the point of any of this?
Yes.
I should give up on my dreams. Yeah.
Yes. That's you.
I was really expecting to be Bernie by the end of this, and I'm going to be Elton.
But I was going to be Elton?
I think, much like you were saying, at different times in our lives, we've been different things. I think the early years, I was Elton and you were Bernie. And I think now you're Elton and I'm Bernie.
Yeah.
Which one of us is more likely to go to rehab? But before you answer that, which one of us is more likely to cry while visiting the other person in rehab? The second answer is easier than the first.
The second answer is you.
100%. 100%. Just sobbing while you're the one going through a trial. Not that, but I guess it would be you just by, for default. Both of us to be at the rehab facility and for me to be crying there, you would have to be the one going.
Yeah.
I don't think either one of us is in danger of that.
I don't either, but like I would check myself into a spa, as they say on Veep.
And I would cry visiting you at the spa.
You would. It was a spa.
That's the end of the game. It doesn't have a clear ending. I think we are tied.
We contain multitudes.
We contain multitudes. And perhaps my theory that everyone has an Elton and everyone has a Bernie in their life is maybe a little off. But maybe we all just have a little bit of Elton and a little bit of Bernie inside each and every one of us.
I love this. I love this segment. We should try to come up with more like fun book-specific games.
Yeah, I like that idea. It's also a good way to cover like other parts of the book that we aren't going to get into. Like my first thought, I was staring for a long time at the Bernie and Elton chapter and was like, I want to talk about their friendship and like how some of it feels very similar to us and like how special it is to find like a creative partner. But also we wind up talking about that a lot. And so like, it's a little self-indulgent to just be like, I love you. Like Elton loves Bernie.
No, I don't think that's self-indulgent at all. I think it's acknowledging a similar connection that we have. And I think there are many less qualified people who would draw a similar connection between them and their best friend. So
I just don't ever want to be the, oh my God, I'm totally Leslie Knope of the world. Like, God, I'm so Elton John right now.
Okay. Well, first of all, you could never, ever be that cringe. So
thanks. Preach.
You're welcome. And also, if we're anyone, we're Tom and Donna.
Oh, we absolutely are.
We're Tom and Donna, not Leslie and Anne.
Absolutely.
Or a platonic Andy and April.
You know, or we're really a Ron and Tammy. And you know I can't stand them.
Which one? Tammy 1 or Tammy 2?
Actually, you know what? I think we're just two Tammys. You're a total Tammy 1 and I'm a total Tammy 2.
You're Megan Mullally. You hate Megan Mullally.
I do. I can't stand her, but she is a librarian.
I get to be Patricia Clarkson.
And she's in the wilderness, so that works.
That's true. That's true.
We're two Tammys. I hate you. Just two Tammys. Just absolutely absurd. Just nonsense.
Absolute nonsense. Absolute sad ho shit. I really do want a t-shirt that says that.
Absolute sad ho shit is so good.
And then cinephiles at me.
Love that.
If anyone wants to make merch for us, we will split the profits with you.
Which will be none. But who knows? You know what? Let's manifest it.
Everyone in your family will buy one. My sister would buy one.
Honestly, they will. They just won't buy absolute sad ho shit because it has curse words on it. So,
Oh. You
know what? My dad might. He just wouldn't wear it, but buy it just to be supportive.
That's really sweet. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back with more Celebrity Book Club.
This episode of Celebrity Book Club is brought to you by the dummies in the audience of Glee. Need seat fillers for a high school auditorium, but don't have the budget for 800 extras? Pick up some dummies, previously used for this exact purpose on Glee. Available wherever fine mannequins are sold.
Carrot, you want to play another game?
What is it this time?
This was one you know and love. It's called Guess That Chapter. Elton John's book is 301 pages, which doesn't seem long, but when you read it, is it possible for a book to have an accent? I think so. It has a very thick British accent, and it was difficult for me to do.
Oi, mate. That's like Australian. That's
not it at all. That can't be. We don't have enough time to cover all of Elton John's book. So instead, we pick one iconic chapter that stood out the most, which means it's time to play our favorite game, Guess That Chapter.
Bring it on.
The setting is merry old England, somewhere in there. I don't know. All the towns sound the same. I sound ignorant, but like...
But also, England deserves to be ignorant about it a little bit, you know?
Great. All I need is your approval.
Well, Shropshire, really, but you know.
Our characters are Reginald Dwight, a.k.a. Elton John, Princess Diana, founder and creator of Quibi, Jeffrey Katzenberg, George Michael, Richard Curtis of British rom-com fame, Rocky himself, Sylvester Stallone, Richard Gere, Gianni Versace, and Shade King, Bernie Taupin.
Okay, if this takes place in England and Princess Di is there, the one Ryan Murphy joint that I love, as everyone who listens to this podcast knows, is the assassination of Gianni Versace. Now, if only I could retain the year in which he got shot. It was either the late 80s or the early 90s, in which case, either way, I think he died before Princess Di. So I was going to say it's Princess Di's funeral, but I don't think that can be true. I'm going to assume that, much like the Kennedy Center Honors here in the US of A, that the UK has their own similar thing, and that all those people you mentioned who are all creatives in the arts profession, I'm assuming that they were being given the Welsh Medal of Artisticness.
Yeah, the Welsh Medal of Artisticness.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. This is the chapter in which Elton John details his relationship with Princess Diana. So it sort of encompasses several of their interactions together.
Gotcha. Because they were friends, but then they weren't.
Yeah, all that is right. So you're going to hear about it. May I paint you a word picture?
Please. I can't wait.
So this chapter is all about Elton's friendship with Diana. They first met one of the many times he was visiting the royal family, which he is quick to say the royal family is not as uptight as you would think. He includes a fantastic anecdote about the queen playfully slapping her nephew in the face while going back and forth saying, "Don't argue with me. I'm the queen." Like, and just slapping him in between each word.
Like a playful slap, like a joke slap.
Yeah, yeah, like a joke slap. I mean, violence is violence. Like,
sure.
Feel how you feel, but sure. It sounds hilarious.
Oh my God. Wait, I'm obsessed with that.
In the middle of Elton John saying how not uptight the royal family is, he explains that he once went to an event in their home where they were supposed to have dancing, but the music was very low. So he felt like if he danced too loud, you wouldn't be able to hear the music because they kept the music volume so low. And hilarious. So then like Princess Anne and the Queen are trying to dance with him, but he's like moving very softly to not like make too much sound. Hilarious.
Amazing.
And then he details that Diana, it never felt that awkward with. She was just someone who was like naturally charismatic, was really great. He was instantly drawn to her.
They're similar in age?
I believe so. Elton John pops around a lot in this story. And so like, because he had a drug problem for 16 years, he has like whole years of his life that he doesn't remember. So it really bips and bops around. So you'll at one point he'll be like 23 and then the next scene he'll be like 45.
Gotcha.
It's pretty linear, but every once in a while it gets hard to follow. But since he just sort of isolated all the Princess Di stuff, I'm not sure of the years of each of these things.
Gotcha.
But I think a lot of this is into his sobriety. So, which would be after 1990. He says that like, Diana was this incredibly charismatic woman that everybody was drawn to. And he was like, and I was drawn to her, but it was nothing compared to what straight men felt when they saw Princess Di. And he proceeds to tell the story about one of the most insane parties I've ever heard. Jeffrey Katzenberg and his wife were visiting during the time of the Lion King. Like they were doing like a tour of Europe either to celebrate the completion of The Lion King or for promotion, but they come and they stay with Elton, and basically Elton is like, who do you want to meet while you're here? And the first name they say is like Princess Diana. And so he puts together a party of a combination of like Hollywood people that were in town and British people. And that list includes Jeffrey Katzenberg and his wife, Richard Curtis and his wife, George Michael just being there doing his thing, Sylvester Stallone and Richard Gere. And they're all there, and Princess Diana is there.
At Elton John's house.
At Elton John's house.
Princesses were just allowed to go to parties?
This is after they were at least separated. I don't know that they were divorced, but they were at least separated. So she had recently separated from Prince Charles, and Richard Gere had recently broken up with Cindy Crawford. So, like, what a time.
Wow. Is this a chapter about how Princess Di fucked Richard Gere?
They apparently just cuddled in front of the fire. So they start talking and they just like cuddle by the fire. And it's just like about how Richard Gere can't stop looking at her. And like, she's into it, but like not excessively. She's just like being Princess Di.
Sure. It's nice to have attention.
But I'm sure she has attention constantly. So she's like,
sure.
This guy? Fine.
Fine. He smells nice.
But apparently Sylvester Stallone was pissed. He was just angry. And at one point later in the evening, Elton John is walking by and Sylvester Stallone and Richard Gere are in a hallway squaring each other up like they're about to fight, like they're gonna fight over her. And then they somehow break it up and Richard Gere and Princess Di go back to hanging out. And then later, I'm gonna give you the direct quote on this because it's not great. Sylvester Stallone is heard saying, "I never would have come if I'd known Prince fucking Charming was going to be here." And then before storming out, he says, "If I'd wanted her, I would have taken her," and then leaves, which not a great look, Sly Stallone. Not at all.
Oh, I don't care for that.
It's pretty funny. And then it's like, that's gross. But also, it's obviously not true. Because, boy, you left.
She was way into Richard Gere.
And she cuddled with Richard Gere. And I think that Elton John was being very loving to her memory and was like, they just cuddled. New conspiracy theory, Princess Di and Richard Gere have fucked.
I sincerely hope that's true. They're both so attractive. I mean,
Richard Gere doesn't do it for me. I think as I get older now, I understand it more. But I just remember being in the 90s being like, why does everybody want to bang a dude that looks older than my dad?
See, that's how I feel about Greg Kinnear.
I leave, like, I would dissolve our partnership. Like, I actually don't think I can talk to you anymore.
So many women I know who are attracted to men love Greg Kinnear. And I, as a lesbian, can a lot of the times understand like why a male celebrity is attractive. Greg Kinnear, I don't see it. He's like, everyone's like dorky uncle.
Ugh, you're so wrong. You've never been more wrong about a thing.
I'm sorry I broke your heart about Greg Kinnear.
I get it. People are wrong about things. People make mistakes, but this one really, it really hurts. I don't know why it's hitting so hard, but like, I think because he's a Nora Ephron player. Like, he's a high quality rom-com man. Now, granted, he is never playing like the man you want to end up with at the end, but like.
Sure. But I should know by now that that's your type. The Steve Zahns.
Steve Zahn is much more my type than Greg Kinnear. But no, I just like a witty New York man in a Nora Ephron film. I like a generic white dude a lot of the time. Like, real average.
Real average.
Hard average.
No, I get it.
Sorry to my spouse. Sorry to this man.
Sorry to this man.
But so,
this party.
That's really most of the story at that dinner party. And we don't know what happened. We all know that Richard Gere and Princess Di fucked. But like, Elton doesn't say that. Elton's really respectful to her memory. But at some point later, they do have a falling out. Because inspiration for American Crime Story, Gianni Versace was in the middle of putting together a book of portraits by photographers together called Rock and Royalty. And all the proceeds of this like coffee table book were going to go to the AIDS Foundation. And Diana had agreed to write the foreword. Princess Di was going to write the foreword. It was going to be a big deal. And then the Buckingham Palace was like, nope, cut it down. And so she backed out and she just didn't write the foreword. So Elton John writes to her and is like, hey, you cost this book, this project, a lot of money that was going to be raised for a good cause. And in press, you said that you didn't know what the contents of the book were, but like, I know that you were very involved and you did know what was going to be in it. And like, I wish you would just like be a little more honest about that. And she sent him back like a form letter that started with like, dear Mr. John, like not Elton, not anything like that. And so he was just done. He kind of cut her off after that. And he speaks pretty openly in this about like, she had clearly started spending more and more time with people that yesed her to death and said yes to everything. And like, she was more and more deluded from reality. Mm. And like, especially the way she started talking about the royal family, it didn't match what his experience was. And I do think like, he talks a lot in this book about the fame you acquire and how you suddenly stop being held accountable for things because you reach a certain level of prestige that people just say yes to you for everything.
Sure, sure.
Then Gianni Versace is murdered. He gets a call from his manager / former lover, John Reed, to tell him that.
Elton John gets this call.
But the second call he gets is from Diana, like asking how he's doing, asking how the family is. Like, she immediately reached out.
That's sweet.
And they sort of rekindled their friendship and they were going to see each other again. But that happened early in the summer, and later in the summer is when she died.
Wow.
He goes into a bit of detail about how sort of after she died, how on sort of all the memorials, people were writing the lyrics to Candle in the Wind. Mm. And like, Candle in the Wind very quickly became associated with her. And so,
but it wasn't written for her.
It was not written for her until the Spencers, her family, basically were like, we would like you to rewrite the lyrics to do a tribute for her funeral. And so he was like, I mean, I said sure, but it was noted Shade King Bernie Taupin's job to write the lyrics. Like, Elton doesn't write lyrics. And he was like, I said sure, but like, Bernie had the hard job. I just had to get up there and sing. And he said two incredible things. One was like that Bernie had to write something that was going to be for like the biggest event ever. Like, 2 billion people were going to watch this, and it had to go through the royal family. Like, this artist, this creative person had to write lyrics that would get approved by the government, basically.
That's bananas.
Really, really strange. And then when Elton John is talking about how easy his job, he said, you've really only got to do three things on stage: sing in tune, play the right notes, and remember the words. If you can only be bothered to do two of them, you may as well go and find another job instead. And then he goes on to complain about modern pop stars and why they mime the words and how that's bad.
Incredible.
The song was a huge hit. He performed it at the funeral, got through it without crying, immediately went to a studio to record it for a, like a tribute CD.
Jeez.
That day. And then by the time he got home, he saw like the funeral procession, and that's when he broke down. Mm. And he speaks in this chapter in a really lovely way of like, it always freaked him out that song became so popular and that so many people were buying it and that it stayed atop the charts for so long. He was like, it seems like people are really wallowing in her death, which is a thing Diana wouldn't have wanted. And like, people really like sat in it for a while. And I was like, that is very interesting. And like, you can have done something that was so profoundly helpful to people, but for you, it's not that. And he's like, I've never listened to it. I won't put it on any album. Like, I don't even sing Candle in the Wind anymore because it just feels like it's no longer like any version, any lyrics. He just doesn't do it anymore because of it.
Wow. We talk a lot about like the grace or lack thereof to give people in the public eye. But something that we haven't talked about is that like, what, like letting celebrities grieve.
Yeah.
In like whatever way, whether it be like a family member or like another person who was also in the spotlight, the process of that, especially now with social media, must be so exhausting.
It must be exhausting. And yet there are some differences because so few people reach the same level, the same height of celebrity that like Princess Di was.
Sure.
Like it's just kind of a different beast, but at the same time, you still have to both mourn publicly and privately. And that's a weird thing that not everybody has to do. Mm-hmm. Like when I personally have lost people, I don't even necessarily, like, I don't mourn publicly, even with my very small follower count. Like, I don't post a lot on the internet about those things mm-hmm. because I've never had to, because no one's holding me.
No one's expecting you to release a statement.
Yeah. It's, and that's like a really icky thing, that grief affects different people in different ways. And the most recent and horrible example is like Chadwick Boseman, but like, if you didn't post about, if you were a major celebrity who didn't post about it, you look insensitive or you look like you're
right.
thoughtless or something. When in fact, you could have just had a different relationship that you didn't want to air publicly.
Right. Exactly. Or you could have even like not known him super well.
Yeah.
And it seems like there's this idea that everyone in Hollywood is supposed to know everyone else, or like, you know, yeah. if a singer passes away, like every other singer is supposed to acknowledge their passing.
You're mourning the talent as much as you're mourning the relationship. And so it's almost like publicly you mourn this person that was a representative in your field or in your world. Mm-hmm. And then privately you've got to do whatever you've got to do. But
yeah,
the challenge with sort of like the democratization of celebrity in social media is really interesting because so many more people get a say in how you live your life because, oh, you did this thing I disagree with, I'm going to stop following you. Or you did this thing I disagree with, I'm going to write a comment that says I'm going to stop following you, but I don't. Like
a great example of this that just happened, which may or may not have happened before you deleted social media off your phone, but Chrissy Teigen had a miscarriage.
Yeah. It happened all right around the same time that I deleted it. So I saw some of the internet postings, but not the social media postings, if that makes sense.
Got it. And many people, you know, because there's, you know, people love to take umbrage with things, but many people were like, it doesn't seem like she's upset. Like, why is she posting about it right away? Like, blah, blah, blah. You know, that's, she just wants attention. And so many more people came back with like, this is a thing that so many people live in silence with because of the shame surrounding it and because of the incredible grief that it is. It's like no other kind of grief. And that in particular, I thought was an interesting example of a personal loss, not necessarily like the loss of another celebrity, like a,
sure,
not even the loss of a colleague, but like a personal familial loss and like how we police the way that celebrities honor that is like gross to me.
Yeah, gross. No, I completely agree.
Yeah.
The policing of and the having an opinion about every aspect of celebrity is really hard for me, which is weird given that we sit around and talk about celebrities once a week. But like,
sure.
But I don't think there's been any person that we're like, oh, you don't get to have a say, besides like people that have done really shitty things and have like proven right. that they don't.
Yes.
Like I do think we've found a way to humanize it in lots of ways, but
yeah,
the fact that everyone gets an opinion on your life, and that's sort of the side effect for all these other great things that you do want to happen, but now people are going to talk about you. That actually, I think if I think about it too hard, would make me like break out into hives. Already am worried that everyone is thinking about me and talking about me like I'm an interesting person anyway.
Right.
And then imagine if that were actually happening. Oh, I
couldn't do it.
I don't think it's for me.
No way. I couldn't ever actually be like famous.
No.
I couldn't be like a household name.
I want the kind of in memoriam segment where nobody claps, like the lull in between.
Like you still get an in memoriam at the Oscars, but no one claps because they don't know who you are.
Exactly. That's the exact level I'm going for.
What an uplifting conversation we're having this evening.
Yeah, it's a real upper. Okay, but that's all I've got.
That's great.
That is couched within a larger chapter, but like his chapters are long and they go kind of all over the place in a great way. I cannot recommend this book highly enough. If you have been thinking about picking it up, dear God, read this book. It's so good. It's so good. It's so much fun.
Carrie, that was great. I can't wait to read this book whenever we have time to read books again.
Books that aren't for our podcast? Yeah, that'll be great.
Uh-huh.
We're going to skip research this week
mm-hmm.
because I added a whole new segment. so we got to change it up. But we're going to hop right in to 6 Degrees of Laura Bell Bundy. Everyone's favorite segment where we connect a celebrity whose book we're reading to the star of the Broadway musical, Legally Blonde, the musical, and other things, but most notably,
but mostly Legally Blonde, the musical.
I, in fact, am going to use Legally Blonde today. So get ready.
Oh my God, I'm so ready.
Elton John has been the composer of record for several Broadway musicals.
He has.
The first and most famous of which is The Lion King, which in another great example of his poor judgment, he remembers saying to everyone that it's a terrible idea to make a musical based off of a movie. Like, there's no way that would ever work.
I mean, in general, he's correct.
He is correct, but like every musical that is, well, nothing's currently on Broadway, but like everything, 90% of the shows you will see on Broadway are based off of movies. Yes. So while I may agree with his taste on that, the moneymakers are certainly based off of movies.
Oh, well, sure. Because it's a safe bet, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's also easier to get funding. Like, you know, everybody's going to back a project with a name behind it.
So he says that, and then he sees the show and he's like, I was very wrong. But he also created several other musicals, one of which is Aida.
I don't think this would be Aida.
It is. We're going with Aida, which is a great musical, but I probably should re-examine it in a like critical race lens and how it's probably not as good as I think it is. Sure. But it's got bops. So Aida's got bops. He also created the musical Lestat, which was very short run. Oh, yeah. But both Aida and Lestat premiered at the Palace Theater.
Okay.
Do you know what else premiered at the Palace Theater?
Les Mis.
Legally Blonde.
Oh.
Legally Blonde the musical. I am going to get from Elton John to Laura Bell Bundy by simply using the Palace Theater and nothing else.
Wow.
So Elton John was in the very theater where Laura Bell Bundy performed her signature performance of Legally Blonde, where she sang Oh My God, You Guys, and Serious, and Keep It Positive, and the titular song, Legally Blonde.
Some girls are just meant to smile. That was incredible. And so that was 1 degree.
It was 1 degree. Did it in one.
There's like a lot of avenues you can go with this one.
Really are.
Once again, I would be taking an unusual avenue.
Thrilled.
I thought I could do it in a different way. I thought of a connection and I was trying to use that, but like a Laura Bell Bundy connection.
Sure.
Like someone I could link to her, but it ended up not panning out for this particular one. But
that's what I wound up having to do with. I settled on the Palace Theater after I looked through the entire cast of Aida and saw no one that was useful to me.
Elton John, there's a movie about his life called Rocket Man.
I'm very familiar.
Taron Egerton. Is that how you say his name? Edgerton?
I say Edgerton. It doesn't matter. Just look at his hot, hot face.
Taron Egerton stars in this movie.
Yes.
He also is in a movie called, according to his IMDb, Kingsman: The Golden Circle.
Okay. I do you not know the Kingsman franchise?
I've seen previews
for Kara. This is straight culture. I'm sorry.
It is. I was going to say, I don't have a male partner. How would I know what that is?
Okay. I think I saw one or both of those movies on Valentine's Day, and I'm not upset about it. Like, I want to be very clear. I love the Kingsman franchise as much as my spouse does.
They're like entertaining?
Oh, just watch the first one. The first one is better than the second, but
okay. Well, this one is called Kingsman,
The Golden Circle. Yeah, yes. Very familiar.
Okay, so he's in that. Another person who is in that movie is Michael Gambon, who played Dumbledore after the first Dumbledore died in the Harry Potter movies. Michael Gambon gets you to Imelda Staunton, which gets you to Michelle Dockery, which gets you to Laura Bell Bundy. So I think that's 5 or 6.
I don't know the number, but I just love that Michelle Dockery and Laura Bell Bundy's weird TNT show is
featuring so prominently.
Yeah, didn't expect it. But honestly, it got me to talk about the Kingsman franchise, which cinephiles at me, but they're all good. They're good movies. Watch them. Watch that and Rocket Man.
Maybe I will.
Kara, How would you franchise this? Can we franchise this? I have my answer.
I think it should be franchised. I mean, it's already been a movie that should have been nominated for Oscars. Obviously, the Grammys have been won. I would watch a TV show about Elton John's various debaucherous parties.
Oh, hell yeah.
Like one episode per party of like his 10 best parties.
Ooh, love that. Mm-hmm. Elton John might have already EGOTed. I didn't research, and it might come up in the last 20 pages of the book, TBD. You know the structure of this pod. We don't do a lot of research ahead of time, but here's what I want.
He is one Emmy Award away from an EGOT.
Well, perfect, because this is actually what I want to pitch, is I want a Rocketman television series.
Okay.
Like, basically, You'll see where things leave off at the end of Rocketman, but there's so much story left to be told. And honestly, you could do an Elton John animated series where, like, you do those parties, you do all this stuff. It'd be great.
That would be fun. You could have the folks from BoJack Horseman do it.
Absolutely.
Because they have lots of very, like, cultural reference-y jokes.
Do an Elton John animated series with, like, all his wildest parties. Honestly, I mean, it is a little bit of, like, what BoJack is already. Like,
for sure, for sure. Just
replace the alcohol with cocaine instead. And
we both like cocaine.
Mom, that's a reference to something. I promise you I've never done drugs.
Me either, for the record.
I'm super scared of it.
I mean, I want to, but I'm also afraid I'm addicted.
Oh my God, I am going to cry in rehab.
I would be the one in rehab and you would be crying coming to visit.
And Kara is Elton John and I'm Bernie Taupin. Don't forget to rate and review, and you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at CelebBookPod.
Carrie is on Twitter and Instagram at CFostTalksALot. That's the letter C, Fost, talks a lot.
You can find Kara at _KPRO. That's _KAYPRO.
Questions, comments, concerns, send us an email at celebritybookpod@gmail.com.
Tell us what you loved, what you hated, and what you want us to read next.
Thanks for listening. This has been Celebrity Book Club.